welcome to Counterpressed on The Ringer and Spotify. I'm in the studio with Jessie Parker Humphreys and Becky Taylor Gill.
Ding, ding, ding!
Guys, you have to promise you won't have a fallout today, okay?
Can't promise anything.
Whatever happens, Jessie, I love you.
Be nice.
Feeling is not mutual.
Be nice. I actually feel like I saw Jessie in the coffee shop this morning and I said, how are you feeling about today? Are you going to be okay? And you, I think, have just lent into the sort of chaos of it all and are just letting whatever happens happen at this point.
Sometimes when you lose 4 games out of 6, you just become attuned to losing. And I feel like that's where I got. Definitely, I will say the worst episode I've had to do this year is after we lost at the Emirates.
Mm.
And I don't think anything's felt as horrible as that. So that was rock bottom. Mm. And I'm kind of hovering above that.
Look, I'm not a twat.
Debatable.
I'm in such a good mood today. I'm so happy that we won. But let me finish. I can see you over there. But I don't want you to be sad. You're one of my best friends in the world. And that doesn't make me happy that it's against your team. I'm not coming in here being like, I'm going to antagonize Jessie. Maybe if you're an Arsenal fan, I would feel that way. But I'm not coming in here like, I'm going to wind you up.
And it's more than can be said for some of my friends in recent weeks.
But I also, I'm going to try and find a balance where I can be so, so excited and happy that my team have done something insane, but also be nice to you, my friend, who has just lost the league.
Well, I mean,
according
to Emma Hayes.
Well,
this is the thing, actually. No one can boil my noggin more than Emma Hayes has done.
I've got the coolest noggin in the place today.
Well, friendship is a magical thing, guys. And I think Becky's just done a brilliant speech around the power of friendship. So thank you for that Thursday morning.
I remember a while ago, there was a big Twitter a jokey fun thing about, you know, would you, like I said to you recently, Jessie, would you give up my friendship to win the Champions League with Chelsea?
And I said yes.
And you said, tough. But for me, football is like, we've had this conversation recently about like trophies meaning everything. And I've had this debate and lots of people on Twitter being like, trophies are the be all and end all. I'm like, well, then why are you watching football? Because a majority of our teams aren't ever going to win things. Football is about the feeling and the community. And I would like,
this
that's
is actually
more important
winding
to me.
Me up more than if you just come in and like lord it in my face.
No, this is like
patronizing.
No, like for me, that is what it is. Like, I love winning trophies is great. But
when your team's basically lost 4 trophies in the space of a month, that's when you can say, at the end, it's about the friends we made along the way. It's not about the trophies, is it, Jessie?
No, exactly.
No, but really, football's about more than just trophies.
You're right. You're very, very right.
And actually, as I said to Jessie this morning in the coffee shop,
your little day without me in the coffee shop.
Sorry,
keep mentioning
if you drank hot drinks, Becky.
If you turned up on time, Becky.
Well, that too. But look, the thing is that you have to respect it and you have to lean into it, especially when the manner of the defeat was so iconic, so chaotic and pure Barclays. It's not like Chelsea went there, were robbed, played exceptionally well. They fell in quite incredibly bad circumstances. And it was something quite remarkable to behold, actually, on live television. So I feel like that, in a way, is funny because all you can do is laugh at this point.
Emma Hayes is the definition of, like, in your notice period. Like, she's handed in her notice. She didn't give a fuck.
Yeah, honestly, I was watching the game with my girlfriend and she was like, look, we've all been there in a job.
Genuinely.
Like, it's kind of true.
Yeah.
Where you just...
phoning it in.
You're tapped out and you're done. But let's get into the game because, yeah, it was not a classic and... Well...
What?
Sorry. Let me rephrase that. The football was not particularly good, but it was a classic. And I was saying this on Twitter last night. It was a classic Barclays match.
Oh,
it was
God.
WSL
Barclays,
heritage.
Man, the Barclays.
It was top Barclays.
No, sorry, I don't need to.
No, too far. But it wasn't sort of the greatest football that we've seen this season at all. And it reminded me a lot of that 3-2 game that Chelsea lost to Birmingham at King's Meadow.
Oh, when, you oh my bring God. That up now.
That Lucy Quinn goal.
No, the no, Ellen White. Ellen White.
Lucy Quinn scored as
Lucy
well.
Quinn, yeah. Lucy Quinn. Lucy Quinn did
and then
score.
Ellen White scored the
Ellen
winner.
Ellen White scored the winner and did her celebration.
I feel like Lucy Quinn's goal was like really good.
It was really good.
It was an absolute banger. And then Ellen White scored the
winner. It won Birmingham City goal of the season, I think, Lucy Quinn's goal. Anyway, I digress. It reminded me of that just because of the context and the sort of chaos of it all. But what's so funny about this game is that Chelsea went in at half-time, 1-0 up. Liverpool had spent a good sort of 20 minutes growing into the game after falling behind, creating a lot of opportunities that they were fluffing or trying to score screamers from the edge of the box or counter-attacks breaking down. Liverpool looked pretty good, which Matt Beard mentioned in his post-match interview. But somehow Chelsea go in at half-time having a scrappy one-goal lead. And you kind of thought, oh, they might play really badly, but just about maybe see this result out. Well, Liverpool came out and said, we will not be missing these chances. We will score four goals in the second half, three of them from corners, some of the worst defending from corners I have ever seen. And I know Gilly gets as frustrated about this as me, but my God, the defending in the Derby this season has been poor.
The thing is, though, it makes it fun, doesn't it? You don't get 4-3 games when there's good defending.
Well, that's true.
The best games in football... when there's bad defending.
I guess. Well, you get
the
goals.
Most chaotic.
Yeah, well, if you want chaos, you get that through bad defending. Anyway, Jesse, it was, a pretty terrible performance from Chelsea.
Yeah, it was bad. I think there were some strange decisions made going into the game. I thought Millie Bright starting was very bold.
And Jeff Longhurst. Terrible take.
Jeff Longhurst jinxed this so bad.
Love
actually.
Jeff at the end, though, being like,
kidding.
Just kidding.
For context, Kate's dad said that before the game that Millie Bright being back would like help Chelsea win the title. But I thought she didn't look ready for this match at all. Liverpool, like, as the game went on, they just stuck Mia Enderby on her and Enderby just like ran her into the ground, basically. It also meant that Bright, who probably is Chelsea's most like physical defender, had to go off when they were then trying to defend like loads of corners towards the end of the game. So that all felt very backwards, especially given Chelsea had Buchanan, Bjorn and Mielder all on the bench. And the midfield as well was just pure dross. The midfield, I'm less like, I can see why that midfield was picked. Obviously, Melanie Leupolz wasn't available. Elaine Shankovic has disappeared again. So I can understand why that configuration was chosen. But it was really bad. And I was really surprised Hayes didn't make personnel changes at that time, given Sophie Ingle was on the bench and who feels like the opportune person if you just want someone to sit in front of your defence alongside Aaron Cuthbert, because Liverpool just pressed Cuthbert so much and she couldn't really do anything about it because there was no one by her because Shuka Niskan was, I don't know, wherever she was on the penalty spot and then Frank Kirby was a ghost.
Oh, Frank Kirby's performances in recent weeks when she's come on or when she's appeared have been really, really poor. She doesn't look like the same player. It's really strange to watch. Macario was pretty anonymous again. I just don't
think... I thought Macario was decent, to be fair.
I just felt like she's not getting in game. She's not being part of the action. Lauren James, foot injury, didn't feature. I guess finally getting a much-needed break because she clearly pushed through for the Barcelona games. But, oh God, yeah, Chelsea were all over the place. And even though Tegan Mika managed to make an absolute meal of one of Chelsea's goals, she then came out firing to stop them getting an equaliser. And I guess the most impressive thing from a Liverpool perspective was the way that they kept coming back after Chelsea kept somehow clawing their way back into the game, which says a lot of a team that would have, you know, fallen behind a lot to these bigger title winning experienced sides and probably
I don't know what you're on about because that's 2 years in a row we've beaten Chelsea at Prenton Park.
Yeah, but two penalties, I think, is a very different scenario.
Still counts. Yeah, the season before we drew there
still
as well.
Counts.
It's a tough place to go. Hey, that's why a lot of people saw this as a banana skin. But this feels different. I think putting four goals past Chelsea is a hell of an achievement. And we have to say...
An achievement. Arsenal did it.
the standout goal...
Better than Barcelona, though. They only managed to score three.
Liverpool should win the Champions League. Is that what we're saying?
I co-sign that.
Hey, the non-penalty XG is looking good from this game.
Oh my God. It was not, actually. Liverpool's non-penalty XG was 1 and Chelsea's was 2.3.
But you had to say the standout goal from all the whole game was Leanne Kiernan's goal.
That was fantastic.
It was such a good goal. The celebrations.
Wow.
What looked like a Yana Daniels snog, which then got cut away by the cameras very quickly. It had everything. Leanne Kiernan being called 35 years old. And then fighting back on Instagram saying not bad for a 35-year-old.
Speaking of 35-year-olds.
Wow, actually, yeah.
We do have a 35-year-old. To Kate Longhurst, our resident 35-year-old footballer.
Wow, her and Leanne, so much in common. Yeah, it was that goal was... what a goal. And the other ones were so scrappy and quite crap, to be honest. But it was nice to have such an impressive goal.
That should have been the winner.
That should have been the winner. But and the celebration
I'll allow
was so
it.
Good.
It's fine.
But Jesse, let's sort of get into where this leads Chelsea, because we had this really bizarre post-match situation. And there's obviously a lot of pressure on Chelsea to win all their remaining games, catch up with the goal difference and win the title. But there's a lot of expectation that they were going to do it. And hey, it still could happen. We'll talk about that a bit later. But what was so bizarre about this was obviously the players were absolutely gutted and there were tears on the pitch as if it was the last game of the season. But yeah, it's the manner of that reaction and then Emma Hayes' post-match reaction where Aggie Beaver-Jones comes out with her, not at the demands of the broadcaster. Chelsea wanted her there. Emma Hayes has her arm round her. Aggie Beaver-Jones is looking devastated. There's one line of questioning really about the title race in which Emma says, it's over. I would like to win another trophy or another title with Chelsea, but it's not going to happen. And then the post-match has to almost pivot into the Aggie Beaver-Jones story.
Masterclass
and then
deflection.
Then it starts becoming about her making an England squad.
Is it the best deflection she's ever done? Like poems, Diarrhea Gate. I think this might be her like...
Hostage-taking is this is the one.
Well, the thing is that I think which... What really got people confused and a bit baffled was like, that's why I don't think it was a very successful deflection, because in the past, she's almost got away with it in a funny way. But this was one where people were actually a bit spooked. Karen Carney's reaction afterwards.
Karen Carney going, weird,
in
weird,
the studio,
iconic.
She looked really, she said it was weird.
Karen Carney's got a really good like, confused face as well. Do you know what I mean?
I love that she was like, I can't articulate why that was so weird, but it was just so weird. I agree that she's not getting away with it in the same way where people are like, people are calling her out on the deflection, but I don't think that means that the deflection itself was unsuccessful.
Because we are still
talking,
we're talking about
Emma Hayes's deflection rather than talking about
why she maybe set
race.
Up the team.
What her decision making.
We've talked about that as well.
That's true.
But I
we contain multitudes.
But like, in general, like the discourse is more about that.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's also part of your talents as a manager is working out when to lean into those deflections. The issue Emma Hayes has had this season, and Caroline Barker mentioned this after Karen Carney said it was weird, is another deflection. You've got to choose your deflections wisely. Your deflections can't be the only thing you have up your sleeve.
She doesn't need to anymore. Like, she can just, like, she will do whatever it takes so people don't talk about how, you know, what her role in this is. And I do think it's easy to exaggerate her role in it to a certain extent. Like, I think lots of these moments have been fine margins in games, and Chelsea have had a lot of injuries and they look tired and they've struggled and it's been like a big emotional heft, but it doesn't matter because she's gone. So she just needs to get through the last few games without people saying, God, she really fucked this one up, even though lots of people are now saying that.
It's kind of like her skills, like her last season, as a manager has not gone well. And it's, I think it's either we're talking about the deflections because she's not going to win anything. And so actually it's like before she would do these bizarre things, but then she'd come away with three trophies. So like, does it really matter? So there's like that element of it. And also maybe it's just that like she's just having a dud season and that includes her skills in deflection.
Interesting.
It's all wrapped up in one.
I do think there's a real feeling, and I think regardless of how much you pin Chelsea's form on Hayes specifically as a manager, I think regardless there's a real feeling that she's let it all get out of control. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the difference, because I think in the past the deflections have felt very clever, very controlled, like she knows where the narrative's going, and everything from the comments around the relationships, the push on Idaval, the comments after the push on Idaval, all of
the
that.
The poem.
Oh yeah, the poem, like all of that just feels like someone kind of losing it as opposed to someone being like the master manipulator.
And also, if you think about it in the context of this season, Emma has had a lot to deal with in her personal life as well. Obviously missing at the start of the season to have an operation, her dad passing away mid-season as well. There's been a lot to deal with. She gets a new job and the whole conversation about that new job then takes over the season. It has been really distracting and chaotic from start to finish. So I guess in some ways it's not necessarily surprising that someone might sort of lose their way at this point and run out of ideas and almost kind of probably say, I can't do it anymore. But there's still things that you could probably manage better in these situations. I think part of that comes down to the people you have around you and the people advising you saying, let's manage this maybe this way this time and not do it this way and better coordinate those scenarios. And I think there's a big gap missing there.
Also, when you've got to that point where you're like this like hero at Chelsea, it's much more difficult for those people around you to be like, maybe don't do this. I think like what you said, Jessie, about her like so obviously losing her head is interesting, because it's a very similar season to Klopp announcing you're leaving and just like absolutely having a meltdown. But I don't think, I mean, he has had some moments of that, but I don't think he's like fully lost his head in the same way.
No, I don't.
And I think
so.
That is what makes it like different. Like, I don't think, like, I'm not annoyed at Klopp for like the way this season's gone. I'm like, it would have been nice to, you know, win a load of trophies in the last season. But I feel like your feelings towards Emma Hayes are like much more difficult this season than they have been in the past.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think I'm somebody who's always found, like, I always say Emma Hayes feels to me like one of those relatives you have where you're like, you're my relative, so I love you and I will always love you, but my God, you piss me off. And I think I've always felt like that to a certain extent about her. But I do think it's interesting, yeah, when you compare to Klopp. And I think there's a world where all of the things could have happened to Hayes that have happened, but if she'd taken them with a different approach, everyone would be very sympathetic to her around what's happened. Because as we've said, there are like other factors to this. There's like the fine margins of the Conti Cup final, whereby I think, you know, Chelsea play broadly fine, Arsenal get the winner. You've got stuff like the refereeing in the Barcelona game. Okay, like maybe people disagree about whether it was fair or not, but I think it's like most people think like that was like a hard way to go out. You've got the injuries to Kerr, to Bright. Like there's so many factors that you could have used to generate sympathy that I find it so funny. Like the decision-making process, which I don't think there was, to like kind of come out kicking and screaming, you know, complete with claw on Aggie Beaver, crying 20-year-old Aggie Beaver Jones as like a human shield.
Like you say, there are genuine deflection methods you had at your disposal in your back pocket that you can say, which you've just reeled them off. Yeah, all of them are big factors, especially the injuries, I think, which really you could see clearly last night in the way that people who were coming back from injury were playing and the people that were missing too. And it is bizarre to then throw a very young player onto the television screens with you and then make it about a sort of like odd legacy thing, which I just...
This is obviously what she's tried to do all year, right? Mm. It's all meant to be, that's what we're meant to be talking about, is the legacy. And I don't know if this is because next season, if Aggie Beaver-Jones plays even better, we're meant to be like, isn't it amazing that Emma Hayes played her last year? But like that is something actually that I thought really stood out to me last night, was just how, for a team that has won so much, how inexperienced they looked, both in controlling the game and in their reactions afterwards. And I feel like that's something that I do think you can pin at Hayes's door in terms of the decisions she's made. Case in point, bringing Micah Hamano on before you bring Guru Wrighton on. I love Micah. I think she's really talented. I think she's going to be an amazing, amazing player. But I thought as soon as Wrighton came on, our attack looked so much more consistent and fluid in a way that you would expect from somebody who's been like with your squad for the past 4 years, who was your outstanding performer last season. Okay, she might not have had an amazing time of it, but Hamano's played about, I don't know, 180 minutes in the WSL. Like that kind of thing. But again, it feels like being like, look at me, I've brought our 19-year-old on. Look at me, I've given our 24 and 25-year-old the shared armband when I've got like senior international captains on my bench. All of that kind of stuff, I just don't think, even though some of those individual displays have been good, Hampton, I guess, another example, she's played well. But then when you get to the bits where it really matters and the going gets tough, are those players actually up to the level you need them to be up to get stuff across the line?
I think you're right about what falls at her door is like the reaction of the players and like, you know, keeping her reaction and making sure that those players' reactions is not, because it's not out of the window, you know, it's unlikely, I think, but it's still extremely possible.
If Arsenal beat City and Chelsea beat Bristol City 7-0,
which very possible,
both results not out of the realms of possibility, then Chelsea have two games where they just have to better win them both and better City's goal difference.
And you look at all those players, I know we had this conversation last night, like all of the players like crying, because we had this conversation about, is her saying it's over to kind of take the pressure off her players? But then you look at the players and they're stood around the pitch with their families crying. Get them off the pitch, like get them in a huddle at the end and be like, do not react right now. Go into the changing room and cry if you want, but don't do it here in front of the cameras where City players can see. They know that they're looking at you and seeing that you think it's over. And it's bizarre.
It is really bizarre, especially from a coach and a team that are so experienced, who will know that sometimes you've got to put on a brave face to show that you're still in the hunt and you're still going to compete. And, you know, there was a big debate in the Sky studio afterwards, Karen Carney saying, I've never really seen anything like this. And this, the way that you would throw in the towel in front of your rivals to base, even if it, and then, you know, Courtney Sue and Kurt were saying, well, you know, perhaps they're saying something different behind the scenes. But I think it's hard to see where the communication, the conversation and the philosophy and motivation would be different when you are so publicly presenting a complete collapse.
Yeah, if you've got that raw emotion out there, there is no way in the dressing room everyone's like, yeah, we're still going to win the league. Which is bizarre. I know, like, they need results to go their way now. And look, maybe by 4 o'clock on Sunday, we all know that, like, realistically, Chelsea won't win the league, because if City win, but like, part of it feels like if City win on Sunday, it's probably because they think, yeah, Chelsea know they've lost the league. And I mean, you know, like, we'll never know, like, how, like, what effect that had. But yeah, of course, it's got to make you feel better as, you know, the rival team.
And two things are very clear, is that it would be the most Arsenal Jonas Ardevel thing to beat City, having nothing to play for and, you know, being at the results that they've had this season. And secondly, City have their own problems to deal with. They don't have their striker. They look pretty dire in the first half against Bristol City. It's not like it's going to be easy. So I think it's so funny for the narrative to be, it's over, when there are still so many banana skins around the corner, especially after a result like last night. It's just, yeah.
I think the other thing as well, from a Chelsea perspective, which is, and it ties into the Arsenal thing, which is what we were saying, is that for Arsenal, they shouldn't see second as being out the window. And if Arsenal watched last night's result against Chelsea, they must surely be thinking, you know, Chelsea still have to go away to Spurs, away to Manchester United. They've surely got to think, well, you know, if they've lost their heads, the chances of them dropping points, like, potentially is still quite high. So again, like, from a Chelsea perspective, like, you have, okay, you're not potentially fighting for a title, even though, as we've all said, there's still definitely something there, but like, you've got a lot more things to worry about than just, like, you're not automatically going to finish second, basically.
I know before we were talking about that United game and you were feeling quite confident about it now, but do you seriously think that second could even slip as well?
I mean, I don't see why not. The reaction from last night is, I think, what is concerning to me, because I feel like what needs to happen in these last four games is you're like, you go and do and you like win as like much as you can and you score as many goals as you can. Okay, last night doesn't go anywhere near like what people expected it to. Fine. but you've still then got three more games. And it just feels like this sense of being like, it's over now. That is like the mentality thing where you're like, what's over? Like, I don't know.
She's just over it. She's so like, over whatever. It. Whatever. She doesn't care. Which is so...
It's and like, I get it's, that it's, she's gutted. Like, it comes from a place of obviously being like, she's a massive sore loser. Like, I'm sure she's like absolutely devastated. I have no doubt about that. Like, I thought her face on the sidelines was like, probably the like some of the biggest emotions like you've seen just in like the pure shock of it all.
The shaking head, oh, sipping the head in the water bottle was...
Wait, can I just say the thing that also boiled my noggin in the mouth?
Okay.
The bit where she said... I'm not going to come out and like say anything about the players. Like, I'm not an arsehole. I'm like, well, you just said it, didn't you? Like, you're blaming the players. You're just saying, like, I'm not going to say it.
But you still say it.
But you're saying it exactly. By not saying it.
You're saying, like, I'm not going to be an arsehole.
But we all know whose fault this is. Like, that kind of thing is, I'm just like, just take an inch of responsibility publicly.
Just take an L. Why people hate taking L's all the time?
I really like her. You can very clearly see her say set pieces. Fucking set pieces after they conceded again. Can we talk about Liverpool?
Of course we can talk about Liverpool. It's Matt Beard, the people's champion.
That's me kissing my badge, by the way.
Can I say, I said to Flo's brother before this match, he was like, it's going to be fine, Liverpool on the beach. And I was like, Liverpool have to play for fourth. And he was like, oh, big trophy. And I was like, no, I think that matters to them.
Yeah, for sure.
And I was right.
And also, beating Manchester United to fourth is definitely a big thing for Liverpool.
That is the idea of doing the double over them to take fourth off them. And I know that fourth doesn't like necessarily mean anything in the WSL.
It does, though, because it's like we've talked about a top four.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. We always talk about the top four, and breaking into that would be huge in our second season post coming back into the WSL. Like, I know that.
Okay, don't pretend you're small time, because we all know
WSL
that
heritage.
Just because your club fumbled it, you were to come back
to
the WSL.
For sure. Like, it's not like...
Yeah, it's not like a rags to riches story.
Yeah. It's not like
Crystal Palace coming in.
Yeah, it's like when people talk about Wrexham and you're like, okay, let's look at their wage bill.
Yes, no, for sure. But I think, like, being relegated was like so embarrassing for the club, and I don't know if the club actually as a whole saw it that way, because I don't think at that point, and I'm still not convinced that they particularly care about the women's team. We have such a successful men's team, and there's like such a great community, and I really feel like that's like a big part of the club, is like this community that surrounds it. So I find it really difficult to kind of see how the women's team is like on the outs of that. And you know, even just like fans coming to the game, you know, we have like a good amount of people, but like nowhere near where I think we should be for a club like this. And I think fourth would also be really important to be like, look, we're here. And like, if you give us some backing and some like great resources, and I know that they've moved into Melwood and that's great, but if you really put some backing behind us, like, we're right there. And I know we've had this conversation a million times about Man United and how difficult it is to break that top three. But like consistently being around there and potentially like third. Like, I don't think we're going to win the WSL in the near future, but Champions League football would be gigantic.
I think it's important to recognise Liverpool 2.0. We obviously have to put the context of the success in the WSL before under Matt Beard. But
Matt
I do
Beard's
think
Barney it, fucking army.
I do
God,
think
I love that man.
I do think it's impressive to see what they've done under, you know, a tighter budget with and a different context entirely in English women's football since then. You know, when they did win the league, they had some huge players: Lucy Bronze, Katie Zellum, Farrah Williams.
It was like nine teams.
Yeah, and it was a whole different environment. And there's been so much investment and change since then. Kay Longhurst, also part of that iconic team for Liverpool. So
can't believe she wasn't the first name out of your mouth.
I know.
On her birthday.
Sorry, disrespect.
I remember yesterday when I was having my, like, I was honest, bouncing off the fucking walls yesterday. I couldn't sleep, guys. I was so pumped. And I was really having a moment being like, God, Kate Longhurst won the title with my club, just my pal. You know?
You were really fishing there.
Yeah, really.
But
fishing.
I do think what they
my
deserve...
My best friend, Kate Longhurst.
They do deserve a lot of credit, because the way that they've done it this time is not by having any huge internationals, really. It's going for...
But I think last night was like that amazing example of like how they got their the recruitment this summer just right, because I feel like kind of the standout performers for me at least were Marie Herbinger, Mia Enderby, and then I didn't think she was amazing, but she got a goal, Sophie Roman-Haag. And I'm like, I think all of those were really great signings. They're all sort of at different stages, you know, like I think Enderby's obviously been seen as one for the future this season, but you've seen in flashes like what an exciting player she can be. Herbinger's like just come into the league and looked like so suited to that level. But like the whole Liverpool team has been, you know, built over like a number of years. There are obviously players who are part of that squad who've been there for a while. But when you look at the players who've come in over the past sort of 1, 2, 3 transfer windows, Nagano, Koivisto, like they've got a lot right in scouting. And when you compare them to United, I think that's very interesting. And for me, that feels like a big difference. I feel like Liverpool know exactly the profile of players they want. And when they are coming in, they look perfectly ready to, you know, deal with the situation they're in.
Two things on that. I think I've always thought that Liverpool's recruitment across the club is really great. I think, and I actually compare the men a lot to Man United as well, because I think they've done really well at finding players who then they create this stardom around, like Mo Salah and Man United men at least. And I think in some ways the women, they want to buy that star that's already, you know, making these headlines. And I think that that's been really great. And I've really loved watching that in the men's side and now the women's. I also think fourth is really important to hold on to those players because some of those players could go and move into teams that, you know, could win trophies next season. But getting fourth kind of cements to them that we're building something here and you are part of that and you want to stay in this team.
I think, yeah, the recruitment's been a massive factor and they've done so well there with that blend of up-and-coming, less high-profile internationals. So like I say, that different approach to where they were before when they were doing well in WSL. And yeah, picking up that young talent, picking up Mia Enderby from Sheffield United, and she looks like such a star of the future, England Youth International. I think Kate was talking her up when we did that, you know, Next Gen Lionesses episode. And you can see how she's come on so much this season. Taylor Hines really pushing on now, vice captain, wore the armband for most of last night. I do think Missy Bo-Kearns probably needs to push on a little bit and show a bit more if she's also has ambitions to try and ever break into the England senior squad. And she's been kind of like the face of the team, also a huge part of that promotion. But it's a really good blend of youth and experience. And credit to Gemma Bonner, because I really didn't expect much from her when she signed. And, you know, maybe I need to take the L on that a little bit. And she had a rough start to rejoining Liverpool. And I wasn't sure how she was going to sort of get back into the pace of the WSL after a really brief stint in the NWSL. But she's had a really good season after, you know, struggling a little bit last season. Obviously a key part of their win last night. But yeah, there's this really good blend. I think they probably need a slightly deeper squad if they're really going to try and push on, because they can be a little bit impacted by injuries. Obviously, having Tegan Micah as your backup after losing Rachel Laws to injury is really big. Obviously, Tegan Micah, Australian international, and Niamh Fahey out at the moment. A lot of experience that they're missing. So Shanice van der Sanden hasn't quite worked out because she's struggled with injury so much. But you can see all the pieces of the puzzle with, you know, those big international signings like Nagano has just been perfect. It's been so, so impressive when other teams are probably looking elsewhere for players that they think are going to fit the mold. I feel like Liverpool are just sort of like quietly doing their thing, and a win like this really stamps their mark on the season because they have been really impressive, but there's been frustrating moments where I think people expected more of them and they've lacked that consistency. Whereas getting a win like that against Chelsea on TV in that chaotic fashion, it just kind of has, well, this is probably one of the best moments of our season.
Yeah, I think the consistency is not there yet. Like that semi-final, the quarter-final loss to Leicester still hurts, because we could have been in an FA Cup final at this point. And I think that's, you know, coming fourth, if we came fourth, is great. But I think when you are kind of around that area where you're not going to win the WSL, but you can challenge those top places, the Conti Cup and the Women's FA Cup are really important. And so I am still disappointed in that, but I think the big picture, I feel pretty good about it.
I also got a shout out Jenna Clark and Grace Fisk, who, you know, I think we were singing their praises at the start of the season when they got their result against Arsenal. But I say again, Grace Fisk should be getting a chance in England call-ups. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling it.
God, I love those girlies. What a day. What a day.
Jessie's getting more and more sort of grumps in the corner. Jessie Parker grump freeze is growing with every minute. So let's get on to this weekend, because as much as Emma Hayes would like to say the title is done, it's really not. Because as we mentioned, if City lose and the goal difference can swing against Bristol City, which is very possible, they're already relegated as well.
Think about relegated teams, though. they're in their notice period. They're like...
No, I agree.
They've got no worries. That's the problem with relegation. I always think it's so scary playing a team that's already relegated, because you're like... The freedom... I think that's like... when football is played at its most free and carefree, and you can... It's like when I drink a vodka lemonade and then I play my best football because my inhibitions are gone. Like,
because you're relegated.
I've always...
If Bristol City wants to drink some vodka lemonade before they arrive at King's Meadow,
I recommend it.
I'll bring some tinnies.
I've always scored a goal after drinking vodka lemonade before football.
It's fact. It's science.
It's just, you just like the freedom that you play with, and that's kind of the same thing as, you know, having been relegated. Like... what's there to lose? Nothing.
And as much as the reality is, yeah, it's probably unlikely that Chelsea are going to win the title now, anything can happen. And I think this City-Arsenal game is going to be really interesting, because City will probably be feeling really confident having seen the Chelsea result and maybe seen those reactions. But it would also be quite Gareth Taylor-y City to then not get the result that they really need.
What if Emma Hayes's big... we're out of the title, crying on the pitch, is 4D chess to motivate Arsenal in that way I just said, that they can still get second, to give them the push they need to try and beat City.
The shove they need.
Hey.
Very good. I think it's going to be really interesting, because obviously there's the sort of narrative from Arsenal fans about really wanting City to win the league because they don't want Chelsea to win the league. But like you say, second could give them a bit of a boost. But then
you would think they would remember what happened when they finished third last year and went into Champions League qualification.
Yeah, it's not been the best for them in that regard. But I just think there's so many narratives at play now about how both sides will approach it. But just something gives me a feeling that Arsenal will get a result back to the square one in the title race.
The most Barclays year of the Barclays Women's Super League that there's ever been. I really think it could be.
Last night did tip over the edge. I was thinking, and apologies, a lot of people might disagree with me. I actually don't think this season's been best for actual quality of football. It's not been an iconic season for good football and performances, but it has certainly had twists, turns, tons of drama, box office moments, huge surprise results, even from the start of the season. Arsenal losing on the opening day to Liverpool. You had the Jonas-Emma showdown on several occasions. You had Sockgate. You had the result last night. You had City losing to Brighton.
Wow, guys. I will be there.
There's been so much drama, but actually not that much amazing football. Does it matter?
No. I think that's harsh on City. I think City have been very, very good this season.
I think City have been really good, but I don't think I've been across the season sort of left remembering incredible moments of play. I've been left thinking about all these sort of hilarious things that have popped up along the way.
I don't think that means the football's bad. I just think the chaos is better.
Yeah.
I also think, like, I also actually stand by that, like, Chelsea at the start of the season is like one of the best Chelsea teams I've watched under Emma Hayes. That's why I think it's so, like, crazy, like, how kind of from the announcement onwards, it's like totally deteriorated.
I think like the announcement has just like mentally fucked with them, and that like, I think you can
just ramps the pressure up, doesn't it?
You can push through the like physical exhaustion of like having, you know, smashed the last few years. It's again, I feel like I'm comparing Chelsea women to Liverpool men all the time at the moment. But 2 years ago, when Liverpool were on for a quadruple and we won the FA Cup and the League Cup. Like by the end of that, you could just see that they were just like, and the season afterwards, you could just see that they were like exhausted. And I think so much of that comes from a mental battle of like, we're exhausted, but we have the mentality to push through. And adding her leaving onto that just like added this mental pressure that they couldn't, that just like was insurmountable.
Yeah, I agree. And probably not helped by the fact that she spent every week from there to now talking about the fact that she was leaving in a variety of exclusive interviews.
I mean, my stock's been high on Manchester City for a while. So if they did go and win it, it'd be great for my personal brand.
I'm so annoyed because I have said City are going to win the league every year for the
apart past from this one.
Like two and or three years until down. This one. Yeah. So fuck Manchester City.
Gareth Taylor's fucking with you.
I hate it.
But I think the bunny thing does change the dynamic a little bit. But
isn't it mad that Gareth Taylor could win the league? Like after all the shit we've talked about him past few years.
Well, I think, Becky, you can log on to The Athletic and read my really interesting article about the impacts of variance on Manchester City season and what that means for Gareth Taylor.
My Athletic subscription ran out. So.
You mean you don't read all my articles?
No, I don't.
Wow.
The truth's coming out.
I talk to you every day. I don't
know.
No
wonder you've got terrible ball knowledge.
In this friendship episode,
I own it.
The friendship episode's taken a real spin. I also want to say before the show is out, we've had a change in the World Cup bids as well. We have to quickly touch on
because Brazil come through.
USA.
Yeah, Team Brazil.
USA and Mexico have pulled out of the 2027 World Cup, Women's World Cup bid, which means it's likely potentially going to be Brazil who win this World Cup, which would be really fun.
I don't want a European one. We've got the Euros for that.
I know.
I want to be flying so far away. I want to be watching a film on the way. You know, I want to really feel like this is a World Cup.
Becky's excitement for a World Cup in Brazil is that she could watch a film. Wasn't
no, it? I'm just saying, like, I want to be on like a long haul flight on the way. Maybe not as long as Australia, but you know, I want to be going far away.
I agree. No offense to no Germans, Dutch, or Belgians, but it doesn't exactly get the blood pumping.
No, yeah. I am a bit. I wanted the basic option which was to roll into a 26, into a 27, and have back to back North American World Cups. Sorry, lazy man option, but I thought that was quite fun. But
they get too much.
USA
stuff.
And Mexico have said they're going to bid for the 2031 World Cups. So you'd imagine they all think they have a good chance of getting that, which is why they're holding off. And that'll be really fun. I do think it needs to go back to the US soon. I think it will have great energy behind it.
But why?
Yeah, also, that's
I think it's a classic. It's a classic having the World Cup there.
Do you think they were like, this team needs a whole rebuild?
We don't, oh, you think they weren't ready?
We don't want it on home soil yet.
Yeah, we don't want to lose on home soil.
They saw what Pebble was up to and thought, oh.
They saw her with a grip on Agabiba Jones and were like, it's not time.
They got
pull out.
They got spooked. But it's been really interesting. The decision is going to come on the 17th of May, so we will definitely be reacting to that one. But Brazil will be fun. It's, you know,
Brazil will be sick. Brazil was always what I wanted.
Brazil, yeah, me too.
I don't need to go to the US.
It's a shame that...
Also, you know it'd be somewhere like random ass, like you'd be in Arizona or something for like the England group games.
Well, even the Men's World Cup is in some
That's what I mean.
Places.
You think you're like, oh my God, I'm going to be in New York, I'm going to be in LA. No, you're in Texas. No offense to Texas.
Wow.
Also, it's just
to
like
Texas.
So big. Across USA,
I don't think Brazil is
small. Brazil is quite big, Becky.
Good point. But like,
famously, 2016 World Cup, England were in the like Amazonian rainforest training for some of their games. And
that'll
I think
be us.
It's sad though that Marta has announced her international retirement just as Brazil might get the World Cup.
She'll do a
come back.
I'm coming back.
Yeah. She's got to come back.
Marta is manager.
She doesn't really get selected anymore, so. Mm.
Yeah, but she's got to come back.
Guys, and my shout, Marta's manager.
Marta's manager, that would be sick.
Brazil. Ooh, World Cup.
Player manager?
No.
Come on.
She could register as a player manager and then, you know, if the going gets tough.
Yeah, well, it'll be fun. I'm excited for a potential Brazilian adventure. That's it for now, guys. Please continue to stay friends. Friendship wins, always.
Do you want to still be friends?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Honestly, like, so much stuff's happened this season.
Yeah.
Like,
who
water
cares?
For ducks back us.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You're built for more.
Roll on the end of it, is all I say.
We will, of course, be back on Monday talking about that Manchester City-Arsenal game. See you then.